the left corner to Aginla. Aginla the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Yell. Aginla's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right. Let's get things going on this Wednesday. It's 1 week from Christmas. Wednesday, December 18th. I did that math all on my own. 18 plus 7 is 25. And December 25th is Christmas Day. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. I've accomplished something on this day. We're underway. Aaron Vickers back for the rest of the week from NHL.com. Steinberg on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. Vix, what's going on?
There's an energy in the room. I don't know how to describe it. I might be terrified to, but we're going to have a good time today.
I think we are. Flames lose 4-3 in overtime to Boston on Tuesday night. Now 1-1-1 on this homestand, and we'll get into some of those things and some of the things that we saw from that game a little bit later on this hour with the Daily Flames Roundtable when Derek Wills joins the program. But before that, wanted to kick off the hour with a conversation that Wes and I started to broach a little bit on Tuesday, but wanted to get a little bit more in-depth in it on this Wednesday, mainly because also on Tuesday, Craig Conroy stopped by the general manager for a little while. So the Flames signed Braden Pahal to a 2-year contract extension on Tuesday. Good, I think. Would you be on like good value, nice story? We spent a lot of time on that on Tuesday. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the future of this blue line and what it looks like in the next 2 to 3 years. So Pahal's got the rest of this year, then 2 more years after that. What does the future of this blue line look like? And, you know, when this new building opens, and boy, is that thing getting closer and closer to looking like an actual building and not just a hole in the ground with a bunch of construction equipment, right? Like, it's starting to turn into something. So when we get to the fall of 2027 and hopefully everything is on track and we're ready to open it up and we'll get the grand tour and the hot stove lounge will be 5 times bigger than the current hot stove lounge. Like what does this blue line look like then? Text lines open at 960-960. And one of the things you brought up when we were brainstorming about ideas to talk about on this show was, you know, who's the next guy to sign a contract extension with the Calgary Flames? And my mind immediately goes to, I'm curious if yours does, my mind immediately goes to, you ask that question, I say Kevin Ball, no questions asked. Is that who it goes to for you?
I think so. I mean, there are two names that come to mind, and one we'll get into momentarily, but just from circumstantial situations, I would suggest that Kevin Ball would be the next in line. In terms of the timeline and in terms of getting your business done in the proper order, Kevin Ball to me would be sort of the de facto next domino to, would this be a domino toppling? I feel like that's a negative connotation. I don't know. It's certainly not
a shoe to drop.
Even that one's a little, I don't know, regardless.
How about checklist?
There you go. You know what? We'll get to the metaphors and we'll finally work through it and we'll agree. Kevin Ball would be next on the checklist of things to do for Craig Conroy as it relates to sorting out his defense for the future. So, yes, I would agree Kevin Ball would be the next checkmark to be. Or, you know what? If you want to cross it off the list, you can do that. Checkmark or cross, regardless, Kevin Ball would be the next order of business for me.
This is what Craig Conroy had to say when Wes Gilbertson, he coyly tried to slip it in there. Basically, you know, Wes's question was no, not really. Connie knew exactly what was going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, Wes says, hey, you've mentioned Kevin Ball's name a number of times because we had talked about Braden Pahal on the blue line for about 7 or 8 minutes at this point. He said, hey, you've mentioned Kevin Ball's name a few times. Is he the next one up on this list for you? Or is that your next contract extension? And, you know, Connie's getting good at this general manager stuff. But this is how Craig Conroy replied to it. Gives you a little bit of an idea, though, where things might be in his head.
You would love to get them all done. I mean, really, you know, just move ahead and get guys done. Definitely takes time. Different levels of contracts are takes longer. And, you know, I think the other thing is there's always the uncertainty where the cap's going. You know, everybody, when Elliott came out and said it was going to be close to 100, agents hear that too.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, well, we haven't heard that. You know, and Gary came out and said it's not going to be that way. But until they kind of know, I think everybody wants to see where the cap
kind of gears things down.
I think so. I think so. And I understand.
So I don't think right now anything is imminent on a Kevin Ball extension. Because as you heard there, and I've heard this a number of times, people with the Flames, people around the league, the fact that we don't know what the cap number is or what it's going to be has agents right now of players who could need contracts or do need contracts saying, hold on just a second. Let's wait to see what the cap number is, and then we can start negotiating on percentage of the cap. Because say that we were talking, because I think a 5 or 6 year term on Ball makes nothing but sense. I think that he has proven what he can do. I think he's been a great fit with Rasmus, and we'll get to Anderson in a second. And I think that he age range, he's 24 years old. I think you're at a spot right now where you can be thinking long-term extension and, you know, maybe just like you would usually do, maybe you're quote-unquote overpaying in the first little bit and you're hoping that by doing that you're getting value on the back end of the contract. But if you're Ball's camp, you're saying, well, hold on a second. You know, if the cap's going to be $92 million next year, well, and we want to negotiate at a certain percentage of the cap, well, the percentage of the cap at $92 million to our client compared to $101 million to our client, that's going to be significantly different, right? And I think that that's where a lot of agents are right now is, hey, we think that this player is comparable to this player. This player is currently getting 3% of the cap. We think our player should get 3% of the cap, but 3% of the cap on 92 or 88 is different than 3% on 100 or 101. And I think that's why you're seeing some agents in some camps saying, let's just hold off on signing an extension. Let's see where this cap number is going to go. And that makes, as Conroy said, you get it. You understand why.
Let me ask you this too, Powell, because to me, there's still discovery left to be done on Kevin Ball. You mentioned he's 24, doesn't have a large body of NHL experience. And in fact, he's only got 32 games with the Flames. He's playing in a top four role. You could argue, well, I don't even think there's much of an argument. He's playing in a top pairing role alongside Rasmus Anderson right now. But is he a top four defenseman, or is he a top four defenseman because the Flames, generally speaking, are thin on top four defensemen right now? So he's found a home next to Rasmus Anderson, who there's an easy argument to be made that he's your number one defenseman. You can make that argument for Mackenzie Weegar too, but it's a plump assignment playing next to Rasmus Anderson. Now, Balls sees that opportunity and has played quite well in that role. There's been some stretches where maybe there's a little inconsistency, but you can understand that from a 24-year-old defenseman who, again, doesn't have a large body of experience to draw off of. So for me, if I'm playing the role of general manager of the Flames, I'm going, okay, well, maybe I'm okay letting this extend a little bit so I can get more of a body of work so I can feel good about the number that's inevitably going to be assigned to him when a contract comes due. And if you're looking long-term, you want to be more and more certain that that number, even if it's an overpay in the short term, you get the benefit of it later on as you get further down in the years. So for me, I would be looking for a little bit more body of work, but your point is 100% valid in, okay, well, what's this cap number? Because as you mentioned, between 88 and 100 million, from a player's perspective and from a cap management perspective, 3% of each of those numbers doesn't necessarily sound like a whole bunch, for example, but it makes a lot of difference from how you're going to manage the cap and from the player's perspective, what actually goes into his bank account every 2 weeks.
All that being said, from a Flame standpoint, are you willing to start thinking about a long-term extension for Ball, or are you looking a little bit shorter? Are you show me, or are you let's take the risk and try to come out with the potential reward?
I think I'm willing to take the risk because he's an NHL defenseman. There's no disputing that whatsoever. So if you get it to a manageable number over a long term, and that gives the player as much stability as he's ever had in his career. His career earnings just sit north of just barely north of $1.9 million. So if you're talking about a 6-year deal at X million per year, that is not that 1.9 on the career earnings isn't life-changing money, but having that stability over that period of time from a player's perspective, that is huge. But
well,
from
that's
a,
how they got Rast, like, in a big yeah, way, that's exactly. how they got Rast to sign his 6-year deal, yeah. right?
And then from the Flames perspective, he's an NHL defenseman. I can't see anything short of injury changing that over a 6-year deal, for example. It just depends where he slots on the depth chart. So if you can come to a number where, all right, if he can still be a number 3 or a number 4 defenseman in 2, 3, 4 years when you've got this up push of prospects that are making things more competitive and you've got a better picture over what your defense looks like as a whole, whether it's Rasmus Anderson being around for the long term, whether it's a player like Zane Parekh popping and jumping into the NHL and you've got to sort of re-slot players, he's going to be an NHL defenseman for the duration of his next contract. So if you can find a number that gives you some flexibility, if he's a 3, if he's a 5, whatever he tops out as, then yeah, I'm more than comfortable giving him that term.
And I am too. And I think that he, like, you take a look at what Ball has done here. He went from averaging 17-24 last year on the third pairing. He was 82 games, but third
with
pairing
New Jersey,
all year
yep.
with New Jersey. He's gone from 17-24 on average to 21-35. So he's upped his average on ice by more than 4 minutes this year, which is very rare. Like, you don't see that very often. But when you go from one team playing third pair to another team playing first pair, it makes sense. You don't usually see guys going from one team on their third pair to bona fide right. first pair on another team. But that kind of goes to show the really good job the Flames did on pro scouting this player and pro scouting New Jersey and finding a guy that they felt could really fit. And so you're getting a guy who is, the offense means very little to me. Not like it means nothing, but it's the way he defends. Megan Mickelson's got some of the stats about his pass disruptions and interceptions and how good he's been in that regard. Yep. One of the better, if not best, player in the league in that respect. He uses his physicality. He's been a great foil and fit for Rasmus Anderson. I know it's only 32 games with his new team, but that's I've got enough of a body of work to say, I want this guy to be a part of the future. Let's see what we can do with him.
And even, I just want to circle back to the points don't matter because they don't in terms of the role that he's playing. But having said that, his next point will set an NHL career high. He's 32 games into the season. He's got 11 points. Last year with New Jersey, he had 11 points over 82. He's on pace for roughly 30 points this year. That's nothing to sneeze at for a guy that you're not asking to really do anything offensive. That is, and that's part of it's a byproduct of playing 21 and a half minutes a night. Part of it's a byproduct of playing with Rasmus Anderson in the top pair. But the fact is that for a guy that you're not counting on for really any offense is going to be, you know, a 0.33 points per game type player. That's just a benefit in and of itself. So, yeah, he has the points, which, again, we're not really too concerned about, but it's what he brings, particularly on a pair with Rasmus Anderson, that really, for the most part, allows Rasmus Anderson to do what he wants to do and what he's able to do and maximize his skills to the best of his abilities. Ball's been a perfect foil for Rasmus Anderson so far. And again, it just goes back to, I don't know where Ball might slot on the depth chart in 3 or 4 years from now. But again, he can play up your lineup. I'm certain he can play down your lineup if you happen to have a bunch of guys pop. Like, there's very little risk for me. And he's only 180 games into his NHL career. And we all know the old adage of you don't truly know what a defenseman is till you get to roughly 400 or so in terms of defensemen that can be top pair or if you're going to be a number 3 or number 4, what have you. But I'm just comfortable in what Kevin Ball brings.
So here's my question on Ball when it comes to what an extension looks like. Is Ball a first pairing guy on this team going forward, or is he a first pairing guy on this team right now? And what I mean by that is when everything shakes out, when you start to count in how things might progress for Brustevich or Parekh or Muse or some of the other young defensemen, Grushnikov, so on and so forth, plus maybe Anderson, obviously Weegar, where does that slot Ball in, say, 3 years, 2, 3 years? Probably, ideally, you're looking at a guy who's a top 4 defenseman, maybe not always in a top pairing role or anything, but you know, you've got 2 pairings that you can count on with Ball on one of them. What do you pay a guy like that? You're probably looking at, like, I don't know, If you're looking at a 5-6 year deal, you're probably looking at somewhere in the 4 to 5 million range. Some maybe it's a little bit lower, but can you be okay with that if he goes from being a third pair guy to a middle, sorry, a first pair guy to a middle pair guy when everything shakes out? My answer to that question is yes, I would be okay with that. I think you're getting good value in that respect.
So for me, when I try to look down the road and figure out, okay, where would Ball slot in on the depth chart? I think your hope from the Flames organization perspective is that you can have a bunch of your young guys jump him in the depth chart, and that pushes him down to somewhere between a 4 and a 5. And it would depend on how you want your pairs to look, because Ball is one of those rare guys. He's very much more a stay-at-home guy, but if you want to put him with a pure offensive defenseman, then he balances it out. Or if you will happen to have Rasmus Anderson on your roster during this timeline that we're talking about, and you want to keep them together because they have a match. Well, okay, well, if Rasmus Anderson is still around and you like that match, well, then Ball is your, you know, in your top pair. If not, maybe he's in your second pair. Maybe he's helping somebody along in your third pair. But the luxury of Ball is you can kind of slot him wherever you want. Right now, you have him up because of your lack of depth and because of how much of a good fit he's been with Rasmus Anderson. And that's where it gets tricky in terms of paying him, because that versatility works in the favor of the player. Hey, I can play top pair minutes and hold my own and let your number one defenseman, hypothetically, again, there can be a debate between Uyghur and Anderson. I would lean Anderson right now. But I can make your number one defenseman pop right now in a top pairing. Or if you need to work me down the depth chart a little bit to help out somebody else and somebody more offensive or somebody more two-way happens to jump me on the depth chart, so be it. Then he's still got that capability to jump up and down the lineup. You can slot him through all three pairs. So there's a value to that for me. If I'm looking at a long-term deal, I'm comfortable with 4. I'd be a little shy at 5. But again, this could be cheap old man. This could be cheap old man Vickers talking too, where a number 4 or number 5 defenseman should be making this. Well, yeah, that's when the cap was at $80 million. Now it's at $105 million. Yeah, we're talking about in 4 years. So you kind of have to use the scaling method as well in determining what that might be. But if we're having a preliminary conversation 1 week before Christmas, number starting with a 4 would be important to me.
Few texts. This says, guys, put your isolation camera on Ball last night on Boston's third goal. He stood there like a pylon watching it go in. He's a third pairing defenseman on any good team. I think it's pretty it's pretty cherry picky to look at one goal, which was also pretty fluky.
Well, I say this respectfully to Joel Hanley, but look at that shot block he had with 3 minutes left on Brad Marchand in the slot, goes off his stick and goes wide instead of going into the net. If you want to iso that single play, Joel Hanley is an amazing defensive defenseman. Like, taking things in just isolation as opposed to a whole picture, you're not going to run a highlight reel clip or a reverse highlight reel clip to try and knock down Ball without including the good things that he does.
Very fair. And this text says, first pair on the Flames versus first pair on a contender. So what's a third pair guy on a contender worth? And I would contend to you, I'm not sure that he's clearly a third pair guy on a contender. I think he's probably, I quite like, the metrics are strong. The way he plays with Anderson is strong. So I think he's, I think you can safely say, not safely, but I think you can, at the very least, I think you can optimistically, without being too optimistic, say, he's probably in your top 4 if you sign. If it continues going this way, he's probably in your top 4 for the long term. And that's what I think you're looking for in terms of a salary.
Well, and hypothetically, too, we can argue the merits of where the Boston Bruins are in terms of being competitive. But they had Nikita Zadorov in their top pair. What happens if you flip Ball with Charlie McAvoy? How much more do you unlock on McAvoy? It's not necessarily saying that Kevin Ball is going to be the number 2 defenseman on the Boston Bruins if he's there when he's playing with McAvoy. But I guarantee you that McAvoy feels a little bit more comfortable in doing the things offensively that makes him such a high-impact top defenseman in the league.
And then this says, given your discussion regarding the concerns player agents and GMs have about negotiating contracts without knowledge of how the cap is going to be, why would they not simply negotiate a cap percentage salary rather than a fixed amount? The answer being, because you can't do that. That's not like you have to.
You can't slide it.
There's no, that's just not part of the CBA.
This says, take this from someone who's an unbiased non-Flames fan. Pay him as a current rate second pair guy, and then when the cap goes up, nothing wrong with having a slightly overpaired third pair guy if you're comfortable with them. That's probably fair. Chris in McKenzietown says, I agree that Kevin Ball's been doing well with Rasmus Anderson. Right now, he's Kevin the Hall Ball, but give it a couple years, and he'll be Kevin the Overhaul Ball. I don't know what that means.
Me neither.
But I wanted to read it anyway because they put
it sounded cool.
It sounds cool. We were trying to go through the metaphors earlier, right? Like, domino to fall,
shoot a drop.
My mom's listening. She suggested ducks in a row or the next duck in a row.
I love ducks in a row. Yeah. Shout out Mrs. Steinberg.
Different last name, but she goes by, she's fine with Mrs. Steinberg.
Okay.
But yeah, so the next duck in the row in this conversation, per my lovely mother, is Rasmus Anderson. And where does he fit in this? And you know, that might kind of like, I think Kevin Ball, you can make a decision on independent of Raz, but I also think you want to know what's happening with your best defenseman this year and where he is on wanting to re-sign here. We did ask Conroy in our conversation with him Tuesday, which, by the way, you can find wherever you get your podcasts. It's part of the second hour podcast on Tuesday's Flames Talk. It kicks it off. Very easy to find on the podcast rundown. I asked him about Rasmus Anderson, and I want to make sure that we're going to play a clip. He gave about a 90-second answer, but I'm going to play about 30 seconds of it. I just want to make sure this isn't taken out of context, and I think that even listening, like, Craig does a pretty good job of saying, yeah, we want, basically the message I came away with on this is, yeah, we want Rasmus to be a Flame, but it's not totally up to us. You see if you pick up the same thing from the GM.
Rasmus is a Flame. I mean, I've always said Rasmus is a Flame. You know, so, you know, I, in my mind, it's not even a question. But, you know, we'll see when July 1st comes and way things go. But, you know, the one thing, I have a good relationship. I had a good relationship with a lot of guys. So, yeah. You know, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but definitely Rasmus. He loves playing lots of minutes. He loves being a big part of the team. I think he sees now that we're going in the right direction.
So, and then it kind of tailed off into some other stuff about the direction the team is going. I just wanted to play that clip because I think it's confirmation of what I think we've kind of assumed, is that the Flames would like to keep Rasmus Anderson in the fold. The GM feels like, yeah, Rasmus Anderson, we'd like to keep him here, but there's a lot of other variables on top of our desire. That's kind of what I took from that is, yeah, we would love to have him here. We view him as a Flame. That doesn't mean that we're going to be able to come to an agreement on July 1st. And he has to, as he said, I had a great relationship with Noah Hanifin and Chris Tanev and so on and so forth. And a lot of those guys didn't want to stay. So I think actually Connie did a pretty good job of saying exactly what's important. Yeah, we'd like to keep him. And we see him as a core member of this team, but it's not fully, totally up to us. But I do think that is an important thing to clarify that, yes, the Flames would like to keep him. And I think that's the right move. I've been very clear on where I am on the Anderson front. I think extending a player that you've drafted, you've developed, and who has turned into one of the best defensemen in the NHL for a team that has seen so many guys leave and decide not to stay here, this is the type of guy that you want to keep if the option is available to you.
Well, and we might be talking about a guy, and we're not directly in the room, but we might be talking about a guy that is next in line for the captaincy whenever Michael Backlund moves on or retires. So there's an inherent value in that as well. And like, I'm of the same opinion as you, where you keep Rasmus Anderson if you can. Anderson holds the cards here. He's the one that gets to dictate his future, as is his right per the CBA, as a pending unrestricted free agent, not this summer, but next summer. And when you ask the question off the top where that got us into the Ball conversation, is he next for an extension? Yes, based on timelines. Ball is a restricted free agent at the end of this season. Anderson's got more time left on his current contract, but in order of importance, Anderson would be top set on my priority list, on that checklist, get my ducks in a row to once July 1st hits and he becomes eligible for an extension. That's the first phone call I'm making to find out where he's at, and if he's willing to sign an extension, and getting that done at fair market value would be a priority for me, because he is, again, at worst, he's your number two. I'd argue he's your number one right now. And he is such a tone and culture setter in that room that he would be a priority for me to sign long term. But again, Rasmus holds the cards on that.
Some of the cards.
Well, I mean, we heard Craig Conroy right there say Rasmus is a Flame. I've always said that the desire is for him to remain a Flame.
Yeah, but they're not going to pay him. Him $12 million a year.
No. I mean, a player has to be realistic on this front too. When I say he holds all the cards, if Rasmus Anderson wants to be a member of the Flames, he has potential to remain a member of the Flames. Again, if he's looking for $14 million, I don't know how serious he is about remaining a Flame. But if he has realistic expectations of what his market value is, but he wants that market value in Calgary, I have no problem signing him to market value if I'm the Flames general manager.
This says Ras should be getting the 8x8 extension yesterday. If he won't take that, they should tread lightly with overpaying too much. Lots of cap space now, but that can go away quickly, especially with young defensemen in the pipeline. Now, you can't sign Ras until July 1. That's the first time they can technically negotiate. I'm sure there's been... let's just...
If he signs, hypothetically,
a guy who wears number 4, who's from Malmo, Sweden, would you, like, if you did have a client like that, what do you think? Those things, I'm sure.
Magically happened a minute into free agency on July 1, nobody's going to bat an eye.
Like Sharon Govich did.
Yeah.
And this says from Mick, if Anderson wants to go chase a cup, you trade him for an absolute haul. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that also, like, his situation's no different than the pending free agents from last year. It's just even more to me of a priority to try to get him to sign than guys that you didn't develop, like Toffoli or Zadorov or Hanifin or Lindholm. Like, none of those guys were drafted by the Flames. Rasmus Anderson was drafted here. He spent time in the American League with this organization. He was developed as a member of the Calgary Flames. He went to development camp as a member of the Flames. They expended resources both in the draft and developing him to turn into what he is now. That's a guy you want to keep. And if he doesn't want to stay, all the power to him. He fully deserves that right. And then you try to move him. But I just think of those two options, I always lean towards keeping that guy.
Yeah, you're not going to get an argument on me on that. We both agree that he is such a big fixture right now and will be moving forward as the Flames continue this cycle of trying to be more and more competitive. He's a culture setter. He's a tone setter.
And I guess to wrap
And he's also
it all,
a really good defenseman. It's not all the off-ice. On the ice, he's equally as valuable.
And I guess he's going to play for Team Sweden at the Four Nations. You don't do that because you're not a good defenseman, right? So I guess to wrap it all in a bow, what does the future of this defense look like? So, Pahal, we know, is signed. Weegar has 6 more years after this year. You've got a Ball extension. Let's say they do that. And let's say Anderson re-signs. Well, now you've got Parekh. And not every single one of Parekh, Prestevich, Grishnikov. Right. Not every single one of these guys is going to turn into NHLers. If they do, great problem to have. But very rarely do you see every prospect turn into an NHLer. But you've got this now really good group to insulate. Like, let's say Zane Parekh's ready, not next year, but the year after. Although I know that he wants to be ready for next year. Let's just say it's not quite ready and the year after. So you've got Parekh in, say, a year and a bit, and Brustevich, and those two guys are the ones, and Grushnikov. Maybe those three are like, yeah, we think these guys can all play in the NHL. Well, you've got Pahal, who I think at that point could be a decent kind of third pair, 7 guy if you need him to be. You've got Weegar, who's a great veteran. You've got Anderson, who's a great veteran. Ball is in a, he's still under 30 and a big part of your blue line. Now you've got a nice group to insulate some young defensemen with, and now maybe you're starting to see a little bit more of Conroy's plan here, right? And maybe you're, and again, if this happens in 2 or 3 years, you say, oh, that's what the GM was envisioning when he was. That's kind of the point I'm trying to illustrate to wrap it all in a bow.
That's what I love about the Pahal contract so much, is it's a 2-year extension. It'll kick in next year. But if he gets passed over those 2 years on the depth chart by a Brustevich, by a Parekh, maybe a Poirier or a Grishnikov or Yermo, Solovyov, Kuznetsov, so on and so forth, happen to find it and take a step forward, you're more than comfortable with Pahal as your number 7, who can either come in a pinch. If he's your number seven and he's only going to play 15 games a year, you know the quality of the individual that you have. You know he's going to be pushing that top six to get in. That's the perk of having Pahal locked up for an additional 2 years, is he's dependable now, and he'll be dependable in the future regardless of what role he's in. But I do think the plan is, if I were to crystal ball it, is the hope is that a Parekh or a Brustevich or both, and then you have a Grishnikov, for example, or another more stay-at-home defenseman, graduate to the NHL. What you want to do is you want to be graduating young players to the NHL. And if that's the scenario, then you have a couple of veterans in Anderson and Uyghur. You have a guy in Kevin Ball who's going to be in his, we'll still say mid-20s, but he'll be in that 27-ish year old range. And then you'll have two or three young guys that are inexperienced, but ready to showcase their skills, showcase their game, push it forward. And then you'll have a Braden Pahal who can insulate all of that. So the way the Flames' future is set up on defense, Conroy should be pretty excited.
Yep, agreed. Vickers, Steinberg, this hour of Flames Talk from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames, it's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Flames Talk on a Wednesday with Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Hopefully you're having a good Wednesday. And now our daily Flames Roundtable for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Wednesday daily Flames Roundtable. First half of the hour, very big picture oriented when it comes to Calgary's blue line. A little bit more little picture on ice right now stuff on our daily Flames Roundtable, starting with maybe the, if you talk to people within those four walls at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome, coaching staff, management, maybe one of the most frustrating parts of the season, faceoffs. Guys, how do we explain Calgary's faceoff issues this year, and do we have any ideas on how to potentially correct them?
I think pretty tough to explain. I mean, you and I were kind of joking about it. I wasn't really sure what else to do with the information when I saw they were 0-11 in the faceoff circle in the first period of last night's game. Nazem Kadri, who was getting a lot of ice time, and he was getting a lot of ice time because he's been playing really well for the Flames. He scored for a fourth straight game last night, but he was 0-8 in the faceoff circle in the opening 20 minutes of that game. So a really bizarre stat. I've been calling pro hockey games for 24 years, and I'm not sure I've ever seen something like that before. They did get better as the game went on. I think they were 50% in the second period. I didn't look at what they were in the third period and overtime, although I don't think they had a very good faceoff percentage in 3-on-3 either. But how do you explain it? I guess the first thing that comes to mind for me is that the four guys who they're using at center right now are all lefties. So they don't have a right-handed faceoff man to take faceoffs on the strong side. And I think that would really come in handy on both sides of special teams. You could put a lefty out there and a righty out there. For instance, if you're on the penalty kill, and depending on what side of the ice the faceoff is on, that will determine who takes it. And even if the guy gets thrown out, at least you have another natural centerman that can step in there and take the draw. And certainly it would be helpful with the power play as well. So I think that is one thing. The other thing, and I don't want this to come across the wrong way, because the coaches and the players know that it's an issue, so I'm not saying that they've just ignored it, but I don't see them spending a ton of time practicing faceoffs. And I think it's more of an individual thing that you would do before practice starts, or more likely at the end of practice once the formal portion is kind of wrapped up. And you know, something I've been thinking about over the last couple of weeks is there somebody out there who specializes in that? I mean, there wouldn't be a coach on the roster who could, be a face-off expert, but is there someone out there who maybe travels around and works with different teams at different levels and teaches guys some tricks of the trade, how to win face-offs? I'm not sure if there is or if there isn't. If there isn't, there probably should be. Might be some money to be made there, but that's kind of hard to explain. They've got some good players who have just struggled in the face-off circle this season.
Yeah, 32% at the dot against the Boston Bruins. Only three games in the last decade they've registered a lower mark than that. That's a little hat tip from Wes Gilbertson, and I think Darren Haynes of Canadian Press has a little input on that as well. Not great, not ideal. I think part of the issue is, Willsey, as you identified, is they have no right shot centers, and there's a strong side, draw side for lefties and righties. And so when you don't have a single right shot, you're automatically on the offside. And again, it's not 50% of the draws happen on the left and the right. It's all circumstantial. But by not having a right shot center that's able to take strong side draws, you're already at a bit of a disadvantage. And we've certainly seen that. The Flames are 29th overall in the NHL after the game against the Boston Bruins in terms of faceoff percentage. So that's not ideal. The other element is maybe they're just not good enough. Part of it goes into having the work, but a part of it is it's a skill too. You have to refine it, but there is some natural talent behind it. And we've seen seasons where Michael Backlund and Nazem Kadri, for example, have been over 50% at the dot over the course of a full season. But for whatever reason, it's just not working for them this year. And part of that, again, goes back to that right-hand shot thing where if there's an icing and the other team gets to pick, I think 9 times out of 10, I've seen the opposition pick to force whatever Calgary Flames center has to take that draw to be on their weak side, which gives the advantage straight away. So yeah, part of it is a natural skill. Part of it is you got to put in the time, but also not having that de facto right shot to be able to, when you're starting a power play, for example, icing, you don't really get to do the line change. So you don't have that there. It's just something other teams are exploiting. But the fact of the matter remains, being 29th overall in the NHL in faceoffs has really hindered this team. And we know how important possession is, and it sounds like a cliche at times, but if you can start with the puck more often, you're going to find more success.
I did find it interesting, and I thought Ryan Huska made a great point post-game last night. Like, when we were 0% in the first period, and that was our best period, which I do think sometimes we're all guilty of maybe putting too much into face-offs, but in saying that, they're still important. Sometimes I think maybe it goes, the pendulum swings a little too much, but I do think also you go take a look at a lot of good teams, they're generally pretty good in the face-off dot, and generally the best centers in the NHL, a lot of the best centers in the NHL are quite good in that regard too. Honestly, guys, I think the on the trying to explain it side of things, to me, there's no doubt what it is. Like, to me, it is the fact that they don't have a right shot guy to step. Like, who, since Elias Lindholm left, they really haven't had any type of option as a right-handed face-off taker. And I think that that is a significant reason why, because now all of a sudden, every guy on the weak side or every guy taking a faceoff, if it's on the right side of the ice, is on their weak side. And very few guys are going to be able to win more than they lose on their weak side. And so now on penalty kills, you've got Michael Backlund or Kevin Rooney taking faceoffs on their weak side. In the defensive zone, that's happening. Oh, I think it's a very, very large factor why we've seen the faceoff percentage get to where it is, where it's one of the worst in the league. You know, again, the guys that they have, it's not like we're talking about this team having any guys that have ever been confused as faceoff specialists. So to Vicker's point, I also think it is partly a personnel thing on top of that. But I think if you could even have one guy, and this is why I've wondered a couple of times, a couple people have brought this up to me down the road. Matt Coronado's played center before, and he is a right shot.
Didn't he take a draw in overtime on his strong side against Elias Lindholm and beat him for possession?
I believe he did.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's something you could think about down the road. I don't think you want to necessarily overload Matt as it stands right now. I'm not suggesting you're moving him to center right now, but I do wonder a little bit if, you know, on that line with Backlund and Coleman, at some point, if that line stays together, could you move Coronado in on purpose to take the draw on the right side when it's his strong side? And I think even having one or two guys who could do that starts to help the face-off percentage of other guys. I guarantee you that if you have a guy taking strong side face-offs on a line, the left-handed center iceman, like a right-handed guy taking his strong side on a line, and that means the left-handed guy isn't doing it, the face-off percentage for the left-handed guy is going to go up. And I can guarantee you that Michael Backlund's strong side versus weak side face-off percentage is much stronger on the strong side. So I guess All I'm saying is, as a very roundabout way of saying, I think the reason is they don't have enough right shots at forward. I think the solution is having more right shots at forwards. I don't think that's an immediate solution because I don't think the Flames should be going out searching for guys to help them with this issue in the immediacy, because I don't think right now and the exploits for the next 50-plus games are the things that matter the most. I still think the big picture needs to be taken into account. But even when we're talking about the Flames potentially acquiring another center down the road, it becomes even more crucial for me that that guy be a right-handed center iceman. And that, to me, is really important, too. It's why I joked on pregame, Wilsey, with Wes. I'm like, could they move Mackenzie Weegar to center? Like, is that something they could...
I mean,
I'm not saying they should.
Just for draws.
I'm not saying they should, but it's just like they need more right-shot guys down the road. Even right now, I was like Clark Bishop. Left-handed shot. Rory Karens, left-handed shot. It's not like they've got a lot of options, period, for it, but down the road, I think that is going to be the important fix to it.
Well, you know, Mackenzie Weegar, he's really good at almost everything he does, whether it be, you know, blocking shots or scoring goals or throwing hits. So maybe it'd be good in the face-off circle, yeah. Who knows, tongue-in-cheek. But the other thing I would add, guys, is that face-off percentage is an individual stat. Face-offs aren't an individual thing. You know, the other guys on the ice, namely the wingers, have to get involved as well. I'm not sure what percentage of face-offs are won cleanly. I think it's got to be well below 50%. So unless the draw's won cleanly, then it becomes way more about the wingers and the other four guys on the ice to help you retrieve pucks. And, you know, quite often draws are muddy. So you've got to get some help from your wingers, maybe even your defenseman, to come up with a puck after that draw. So, the individuals could be better. There's no doubt about it. But for me, especially at 5-on-5, it's more of a team thing. And sometimes maybe face-off percentage gets overblown 5-on-5. But where it really matters is on both sides of special teams and in 3-on-3 overtime. And certainly didn't help the Flames cause last night.
Yep.
Wouldn't help the right shot portion of this. But anybody know what Yannick Perreault's up to these days?
Ha! Yeah, that was a good or
maybe he should be that face-off coach I was talking about.
Was it Zenon Konopka? He was a big face-off.
Konopka's
specialist.
Number two all time. Yep. Well, since they started recording in 97-98.
He's got one of the best names of all time. Like, how could you not?
Zenon
Konopka.
I called his games in Junior B.
Well,
like, what does that say about me? How old am I now?
Well, it says is, Wilsey, make a call. Get off your...
Sounds like you have a connection.
Get off your keister and do something about it.
I could probably track him down.
Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg. Okay, how have we felt about that new, I don't know, do we call it the second pair of Joel Hanley and Mackenzie Weegar? They've played two games together now, paired up. How have we felt in 6-plus periods of those guys together? And are you making a change for Thursday against Ottawa?
Yeah, you would call it the second pair. There's no doubt about that because Mackenzie Weegar is on it, and he is your second best defenseman, or on some nights your best defenseman. So it's definitely the second pair right now, but I don't think that is a pairing that will be together from now until the end of the season or from now until the end of time. And that's with all due respect to Joel Hanley, who is a consummate professional who can sit out for a month, come in, and, you know, he looks like he didn't miss a day or miss a beat. Just, you know, one of those rare guys who can sit out for a long period of time and come in and play basically the same game that he would if he'd played the night before. So I give him a lot of credit, but ultimately he's not a top four defenseman in the NHL. And I think he'd be the first guy to admit that to you. So I don't think that the pairing will stay together long-term. I do think that, you know, this has been a bit of a break for Daniil Miramanov, and, you know, Joel Hanley had one good game and earned another one. And I would say probably had another good game, and he's probably earned another one at this point in time. And that certainly is how things looked at a very optional practice today with the pairing still intact. But I just don't see Hanley being a long-term fit in the Flames top four. And you know what? Some might argue that they don't see Miramanov being that guy, but they've got different skill sets. Hanley's a lot older than Miramanov and more of a finished product, but I think in a perfect world, Miramanov figures it out and starts playing a lot less tentatively than he has been, I would say, for most of the season, certainly of late. He just kind of looks like he's stuck between a guy who's trying to be good defensively and a guy who's at his best when he's getting involved offensively and joining the rush and, you know, using his feet to get in there on the forecheck if he decides to pinch. Right now, he just kind of looks like he's stuck in no man's land a lot of the time. So, again, in a perfect world, I think you probably revert back to the second pairing that we've seen for most of the season with Uyghur playing on his offside on the left and Miramanov on the right. But right now, you know, Hanley's come in and kind of done what Joel Hanley usually does, give you some pretty solid minutes back there. And as a more of a defensive defenseman, I think he allows Mackenzie Uyghur to be at his best in the sense that, you know, you want him to get involved offensively. So it's been okay. And short term, I don't mind that combination. But long term, I think I'd probably like to see Miramanov get another crack with Uyghur.
Yeah, I think that this isn't necessarily going to be something that we see ridden out for the next 50-ish games of the year. But for now, Hanley's been serviceable with Uyghur, and I've liked Uyghur back on the right side, to be perfectly honest. And this is an incredibly small sample size. We're talking 32 minutes together on the ice. Hanley and Uyghur lead all Flames combos that have played at least 30 minutes together and expected goals of 55% and 59.6% in the possession metrics. So it's been a good pairing, simply put, for the Flames since they've been put together. Is this a long-term thing? Is this, you know, Uyghur's found his Kevin Ball, if you will, in Hanley? No. But it's getting results, at least in the short term, at least in terms of some advanced metrics. I know, shout out Wes Gilbertson on the expected goals call here, but it's worked in
you know,
the small sample size.
Expected goals is a very, very useful stat, and we can't always be like, oh, expected goals doesn't mean anything because
I just
Wes Gilbertson doesn't like it.
No, I'm just giving Wes the gears when he's not here to defend himself.
I'm done with Gilbertson. And
as we all are.
I don't want him back on this show is the main point.
Long story short, it's worked in a small sample size, and it's earned a bigger sort of opportunity for me. It's not going to be another 50 games, but in the short term, it's the best of what you've had.
Yeah, I mean, I guess long and short, because the numbers have been strong. They've outscored the opposition 3-0. The Flames have when that pairing's been on the ice, 3-1 rather, when that pairing's been on the ice. And I think more than anything, if you can keep Uyghur on the right side or get a few more looks of Uyghur on the right side, I'm all for it. So I guess I'm keeping them together. That's not changing for me going into the game against Ottawa on Thursday. In fact, I've quite liked Bean and Pahal as a pairing as well. So I'm not changing that. So I'm keeping things kind of exactly the way they were the last two games on the blue line. And I think I give Joel Hanley a lot of credit. He stepped right in, and even when he joined us in the first intermission of the game on Tuesday night, talked about how easy it is playing with a guy like Uyghur, and I think especially with Mackenzie on his right side or his strong side, I think he can elevate a D partner with him, and I think there's a little bit of that going on right now. So, yeah, keep it as is for the time being. I'm with you. I don't think there's a long-term fit, but I think it's cool to see what he's been able to do, Hanley, in that spot. And I think long-term, if you're the Flames, you want Uyghur on the right side. And you've gotten two games this season with him on the right side, and the results have been pretty strong.
I've got another way to do that. I really like how Jake Bean is playing right now. And yes, I do like him on the left side of a pairing with Braden Pahal. But before the season started, I thought Jake Bean was going to be a top four defenseman for this team. It hasn't worked out that way yet, but I still think there's an opportunity for Jake Bean to play his way into the top four. To me, guys, and again, this is no disrespect to Joel Hanley. I love him as a guy. I love him as a hockey player. But I think Jake Bean probably projects to be a top four guy more so than Joel Hanley does. Former first-round pick, Calgary native, probably took him a little bit of time to get comfortable playing for his hometown team for the first time. But he's played in, what, 8 straight games now? And he's been really good. I think he's helped the Flames generate a little bit more offense because, you know, he does skate so well. And I think he's got a really high hockey IQ, picks the right time more often than not when to jump up into the rush and get involved offensively. He's been really good with his shots and shot attempts. So, you know, I can envision a scenario where Jake Bean ends up playing on the left side of a pairing with Mackenzie Weegar on the right. Could you guys see that happening down the road?
I don't mind that as a potential. I mean, I don't think they signed Jake Bean to be healthy scratched a lot of the time. I really don't. And I think that they gave him some time to get comfortable, and I do feel like he's gotten more comfortable. Even offensively, he's been getting some looks. I'm curious as to how that would, like, I don't know if Bean Weegar would be a great fit, but I'd be willing to give it a try for a little while because, again, anything, in my eyes, anything that keeps Weegar on his strong side, I think is good for the organization, is good for Mackenzie. And that's not to say Weegs has played poorly on his weak side. His versatility and his ability to play his offside has been huge for the team and helped Daniil Miramanov settle into his time with the Flames last year, and that was a pretty good pairing for him down the stretch last year. But I still think, and everybody I've talked to believes that Weegar is still even better on his strong side compared to the left side. So if you could find a way to have both Rasmus Anderson and Mackenzie Weegar as right shot D anchoring their own pairings going forward, I think that's massive for the team. So if Jake Bean's the answer, then let's at the very least see and give that a try at some point. I'm completely with you on that, Wilsey.
While I don't disagree that Mackenzie Weegar is better overall on his strong side, the one thing I like about him playing on his weak side is that it gets his stick to the middle of the ice. And I think it's one of the reasons why he scored 20 goals last season. He was so good, whether it be 5-on-5 or on the power play, with his stick as a right shot and playing on the left side, being in the middle of the ice. So I do like that part of him playing on his weak side, but you know, ultimately him playing on a strong side is probably where he probably should be. But again, you love that versatility.
Yep. I like the idea of down the road, maybe not right now, continue letting Jake Bean get more and more settled. And that pairing with him and Pahal has been nice, but at some point in the not so distant future, I'm with you, Wilsey. I'd really like to see that. That'd be a very interesting experiment and worthwhile one to try for a decent period of time before this season comes to an end. For now, the roundtable comes to an end. Great stuff, gentlemen. We'll do it at the Dome on Thursday on a game day against the Senators. Thank you, Wilsey.
All right, guys. I'm going to keep Christmas shopping here.
Good luck. Godspeed. And come home alive. Derek Wills, the voice of the Flames, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg. That's your Daily Flames Roundtable. As we start to wrap things up this hour, we've got Shan Vergie and Cam Hughes, our outstanding producers this hour here on Flames Talk. The Daily Flames Roundtable, as we wrap up this hour, brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.